I got 3 bars, so we'll see how long it lasts.
Okay, great. So, well, Rico Mariani.
Hey.
With you again.
We've been here. The lighting really sucks. Hold on a second.
Do my turn?
Yeah, that'd be good. Much better.
Turn on the overheads?
Much better. I'll get over here, so.
Okay, let me over this side.
I'm not professional.
I noticed it.
I have to tell you. That's right.
So the last time we talked to Rico, we talked about whether or not he's going to go to the PDC. Turns out he is. And you're going to talk about, let me guess, performance, writing, performing code?
I'm going to have a lot of fun, actually. I'm doing at least 3 different things. I've got a lunch session where I'm going to talk about new things that have developed in the CLR, things I want you to take advantage, stuff I'm excited about, and kind of explain what we did at the low levels and kind of why we did it. It's sort of, you know, the top 10 things you should know about WIDB from a CLR perspective. And if you've ever seen me talk, I'm promising not to bore anyone. It's a lunch talk, so, you know, I want people to be able to drop in and kind of, you know, get 3 of the top 10, and whichever ones they can see would be great, or maybe they'll stay for the whole thing. I'm hoping I'll be heckled a little bit. I'm going to try to involve the audience and kind of, you know, get them to ask me questions or challenge me or whatever. I just want to make it fun. It's a lunch talk, you know,
so I don't want to take it too seriously.
I'll remind you there. I want to hear the hard questions. I mean, I've got some material, but really I'd like it to be kind of a, you know, audience participation kind of event. It'll be a lot more fun, you know, because you can read about what's new in WIDB on my website. I mean, you know, you don't need me in person for that. So whenever I show up in person, I try to kind of, you know, make it some personal contact, you know.
Fantastic.
Not just stand up there and read my slides or whatever.
Excellent.
So I'm doing that. And speaking of personal contact, the main thing that I'm doing is I'm running performance clinics. 30 minutes a pop. Go to my blog. It's blogs.msdn.com/RicoM. And there's instructions there for how to nominate yourself. And we're going to pick, I think it's about 60 different people. So like, I'm going to work 8 hours a day for 4 days. So it works out to about 60 slots, plus or minus I got to go to the bathroom. So we'll figure it out. But it'll be something like 60 slots. I'm going to pick 60 people. They won't all be like big companies. You don't have to be a Fortune 500 company. You know, if you're excited about PERF and you've got an interesting problem, you know, tell me about it. Mail the alias and, you know, we'll pick some people. Hopefully we'll do a good job. And I'll get, you know, a chance to spend a half hour with you talking about whatever you want to talk about. If you want to talk about, you know, what are your big beefs and what do you want to see in the next version, we can talk about that. If you want to help doing some analysis or recommendation for what tools you could be using or what techniques might be helpful. Mm-hmm. If you want to bring your logs in. Remember last time you were saying, what should a guy bring? Okay, yeah. Now I'm telling you. Bring some CLR profiler logs if you want to talk about that. Bring VA dumps. Bring, you know, the usual kinds of things. Bring an SOS log. Okay, go and do a debug thing. Bring a dump if you want. Bring a heap dump that you took in the debugger, and we'll look at it. Okay, I mean, whatever you want to bring, just bring it. I'll look at it. I'm sure there's going to be lawyers involved, but we'll try to make that easy, and you know, have it some kind of sensible agreement. And obviously, you know, don't come and tell me all your IP that I couldn't possibly be legally allowed to know. But you know, bring pretty much whatever you want me to comment on, and I will do my best. And you get a half hour of, you know, how hopefully you find my advice valuable. And you get a half hour of that, and it should be a lot of fun.
Absolutely.
You know, and again, I promise not to be dry and boring. We'll be in there, and I promise not to hold back. If I think, you know, you're doing it the wrong way, then I'll tell you. You know, and I'll tell you the right way, and hopefully you'll forgive me. And the last thing is I'm on a panel where we're discussing CLR futures. And some of my colleagues, you're talking to a bunch of them later. And we have probably a separate session to talk about that one, too. So
yeah.
So I won't go into that, but I'm looking forward to that one, too. Anytime I get a chance to hang out with you know, the likes of Patrick and, you know, Brad and so forth, the fun stuff is going to happen. And we want to, you know, draw the audience out and have them ask us the tough questions.
Absolutely.
You ask me the tough questions, you know, like, you know, you're always piping up on about how I could possibly expect to get good perf out of managed code and making me hold my ground. So I know what I'm being baited, and so we want that from the audience again.
Fantastic.
You know what we want people to come and say, you know, hey, I'm doing this, you know, when can you help me? Can you help me now? Is this the release for me? You know, and what's coming down the pike? When is the release for me if now isn't the one? We want to answer those questions. We want to tell people what's going on. So come and see me. You know, come and hang out in the PERF clinics. Nominate yourself. The email address is on my blog, and you probably get it from the PDC website as well if you can't find that. But my blog is easy enough to find. You know, do a search for Rico Mariani if you don't remember the URL. And, and I think just searching for Rico is enough, R-I-C-O.
The last time we were here.
Rico and then Perf.
Yeah, that'll do.
Google or MSN.
Yeah, pick your search. Pick a search engine.
The last time we were here, we asked you what were the top three things to do for to get better proof out of your CLR apps. What are some obscure ones to do?
Obscure things to do to get better perf. I don't usually talk about obscure things to do to get better perf. I guess I could tell you about, there's exotic options in NGen that you can use if you have shared libraries that are, you know, applicable for some people. That'll help. Like, you could turn on string freezing and hard binding and stuff, and that helps some people that have significant libraries. So that's kind of obscure. I don't know that it makes my top 10 list, but like, I try to talk about mainstream stuff that like is going to help a lot of people, much more so than I tend to talk about, you know, exotic perf stuff.
Sure.
If you read my blog, you know, I don't talk about, oh, you know, what's the difference between the L2 cache replacement policy on the, you know, the P5 version 3 of the silicon version versus version 2 of the silicon. I mean, like, people just don't care, okay? They don't want to know.
Yeah.
Right? They want to know how to, you know, how to make their program fast, and nobody wants to think about, like, and I'm sure the Intel guys think very hard, so I shouldn't say nobody. But the Intel guys are doing that stuff, and they're, you know, and the AMD guys, they're doing that stuff. And really, I try to put this stuff in the context of what a typical kind of programmer who's got a performance problem should probably want to know, and like, you know, where are the horses, and not worry so much about the zebras.
Yeah.
You know,
and it'll be good to just smash the myth of managed code automatically being less performant.
Sure.
You gotta, because it's just the noise level. There's a whole bunch of,
but how do you do that?
Well, by going to listen to him talk and practicing and writing code.
Come and listen to me talk, but why don't you read? I wrote a six or seven part series. Raymond Chen did a Chinese to English dictionary reader. He wrote it in unmanaged code using ATL and C++ a few months ago.
Yeah.
You can find it. Performance quiz number 6, I think.
Well,
it's
Raymond's
right.
A smart programmer.
Raymond is not a dumb guy. Nothing dumb about that guy.
No.
Raymond wrote it, and he wrote it in kind of a, you know, he started with a fairly naive implementation, and then he followed excellent engineering steps to tune it, okay? And you can see, and I won't give away the answer, you can see where he was when he started, and where the managed code was, where he started. And you can see what he did to beat the managed implementation, and you can beat it. But Raymond moved a mountain to pull it off, right? And at the end, you know, it's you wonder whether it was worth the price, and you could have started at
and you
at
have
perfect.
To be
really
Raymond
good.
Chen, and there's only one of those.
There's only one Raymond Chen.
And we got him.
Other people could have done it. I mean, I'm not going to say you couldn't have done it, but I think you'll find that the cost is very high, and at the end, it wasn't that much better. So have a look, and you'll see.
Cool.
This isn't something that we made up. He was doing the study, and I thought it'd be interesting to see how it compared.
Well, I mean, the fact of the matter is, if you know, you're for those of us inside the company who are on the aliases and stuff, Raymond has been a skeptic of managed code from the very beginning, and it's a beautiful example of exactly why he's probably not especially skeptical.
Raymond's brain thinks in assembly, though. Not very many of us have that skill.
My experience has been that he's been very balanced. So, yeah. I don't know. And maybe he's come around or something, huh? But whatever. But
fantastic.
But it's just one example. And there's a lot. There's a lot of applications that are in that category. It's the reason that I like that example is because it's not some wild thing. It's the kind of thing people kind of do, you know, and your app would probably look kind of similar, and you just get a lot of goodness, you know, for free. And the nice thing about that article is it also goes into the weaknesses, right? I don't try to just, you know, make it sound like the be-all and end-all and its perfection. We have work to do in some areas. Some places we have a lot of work to do. We can make it a lot better. And so I'm, you know, very open kimono. At the end, I'm talking about, okay, well, you know, people complain about managed code, and, you know, here's what they're complaining about, and that's not really the issue. I mean, look how nice this was. But now let's look at the bad side, too, okay? See, here's where we really didn't look so good.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can compare kind of, okay, well, and what was the cost of entry, and, you know, how maintainable was it? And so when you look at the sort of complete package.
Now, are you going to go into that in your talk?
Not planning to. That in itself would be, you know, a couple hours. We could do a clinic on you know, how to do an analysis and what are the differences are. So in my talk, I'm gonna try to keep, because it's a lunch talk, I'm gonna try to keep it light. I'm gonna try to hit the highlights. I'm gonna try to make it so you can show up halfway through, or you know, if you're talking to your friends about something that interests you for a few minutes and you miss something that I said, you won't be out of context.
Yeah, fantastic.
And so that's appropriate for a lunch talk.
And bring your ailments.
And bring your...
Bring your ailments. Bring your perf ailments to Dr.
Sure.
Mariani.
Sure. Whatever
go pains to a clinic with an ailment.
Whatever pains you...
But it has to be perf-related.
Yeah, I'll talk about whatever you'd like to talk about. If you say you want to talk about something that isn't perf-related, you're not likely to get a nomination. So
Understood.
All right. So,
excellent.
Well, thanks for spending some time with us.
Yeah, you're welcome.
And
pleasure seeing you guys.
For the CLR.
Yeah, I'll see you in a little
That's
bit.
Where we're heading right now, so if you want to come with us.
I'll follow. So where are we going now?
So we're going to the opposite end of the hallway here,
All right.
Where we're going to talk to a bunch of architects, including our product unit manager. They're all doing a panel on CLR futures.
Fantastic.
So they're going to talk about sort of where the product's going in the future, and you know, some of the controversial topics that we're thinking about investing in the future, and our certain directions we're thinking about going. And ultimately, I mean,
I'm trying
you
to guess
get
where
feedback
you're going.
From.
You're faking me up.
So we really want to get feedback from customers. That's why we're coming out and talking about this stuff so early
Great.
On. I think we've got Brad. It's right here.
Want to do it here?
Yeah.
Sure.
Good.
Did you pass Jason on the way? Or?
Yeah. He's sitting in a meeting.
Oh, cool, pinball machines. Oh.
Yeah, you like this? This is sort of our diversion activity. You see they're actually really advanced monitors. These are actually running Vista, you can tell.
So, nice. How do we just want to gather around?
Yeah,
sure.
Yeah, pull up a chair.
Oh, I love this. Machines automatically go dead, 9 a.m. to noon.
That's the new parental controls feature of Vista. You put it so much about.
And who are you?
Jim Miller.
Jim Miller.
Yes.
And what do you do here?
I don't know. I'm an architect on the CLR team, and mostly I've been working on versioning for the last 2 years. Looks like a good two more. So I got permanent employment here at the company. That's good.
Security.
That's right.
There's as much job security in versioning as there is in performance.
Yes.
Let me just fool around here. Okay, cool. So who's leading this? You are?
Okay, so this is basically... Like I said, we're talking about CLR futures, various things that we're investing in the future for the product. Brad is emceeing. It's a panel, so we'll have Jim, Rico, Patrick, who couldn't be here, and Jason, who is our product unit manager, who we just passed.
Looks like he's coming
along. I think he's coming along. So, I don't know. Do you want to go around and just talk about kind of things you're interested in investing in?
Actually, let me start. So the thing that's going to make the panel really successful, or any panel, is the questions people have. It's actually one of the things I'm nervous about, because like a talk I can make happen, right? I mean, a talk I can do the thing, but for a panel, I need people to come with sort of good, meaty discussion topics. And one of the things as a moderator I'm looking forward to is discussion topics that you can see some color of the CLR team in a little bit, you know, so maybe Jim's going to give a slightly nuanced answer to what Rico might say, to what Jason might say. So as these...
Rico and I, we're always on the same page.
Yes, exactly. Our architects always completely agree, so it's not going to be an issue.
Can we can the audience members ask stupid questions like, when are you guys going to distribute the CLR with the OS or something like that?
Yeah, I guess you could ask, but see, my job is the moderator. You understand? So what?
Got the gong.
Yeah. So what I think, you know, as these guys go around and talk about what they're gonna, what their area of expertise or interest in.
I just was thinking about that.
It is gonna be distributed with the operating system. So now you don't have to answer.
Yay!
As these guys talk about what their area of expertise is, it'd be good if you could think about the kind of questions that go with those areas and things like that.
Fantastic.
So who should we start with? Should we make Jason go first? Since he's
sure.
Last
one. Yes. Okay. Great. Yeah. So I expect us to be talking a lot about some of the future plans that
yep.
we have. Obviously, that we've
yep.
already started to discuss. We've mentioned some. Jim's going to be doing a talk, which he's probably already talked about already, about how to solve some of the problems with add-ins and make that kind of thing working with versioning and stuff like that. I hear a lot of pain threshold on that. I have a couple of different blog entries that people have just, they still yell at me for it. The comments are locked down. I'd still like to chew you out some more. So here's your opportunity. You want to ask me about linkers and how linkers work and, you know, whether those are a good thing to have or not, we can have that conversation. I think the add-ins and why there is no assembly.unload, we can have, you know, conversations on that
too. So Jason, I want to talk a little bit about your history, like where you came from and blah, blah, blah. I mean, like in the database space and...
Yes, I've been Microsoft for 13 years. I'm the product unit manager of the runtime.
And you've been on Channel 9.
And I've been on Channel 9 before, so I've got a little bit of history there as well. I can probably link that scope a little bit.
Yeah, we can link it up.
So came here to work on ODBC, the original version. After that, went over to work on database stuff related in DevDiv, right? Yeah, so like the repository area, stuff like that. Worked on Brian Harry's team. A lot of people think I came with Brian Harry. I actually didn't. I was on the team that purchased his company. We did that for a while. And
So that was your fault.
Yes, it was my fault. Yes. Yep. And then been working on this team for, geez, what? Jim, how long have we been doing this? Seven and a half, 8 years.
Yeah, you've got a little more than me. So yeah, it's been seven and a half or 8 years
now. Yeah, something like 8 years on the CLR or its predecessors of some sort like that. So anyway, so for the panel, I'd love to hear some of those comments. I hear those when I visit customers, so it'd be interesting to hear that. I think versioning dynamic languages are also very interesting. I expect to hear a lot about that at the PDC, so good opportunity to ask some questions there. Ask Rico about XML. He'll be happy to talk to you about that as well.
Some
of the color, you know, kind of stuff. Yeah, we can do that too.
What developers on the outside world are trying to figure out. What developers on the outside world are trying to figure out is, why does Windows matter anymore? And the CLR really is the future of Windows, isn't it?
Well,
and of the rich client, right?
Yeah. Well, I think that, you know, obviously there's a ton of value in Windows, right? So, I mean, there's a lot of great stuff coming out in Vista, so I was going to explain that. In fact, there's a lot of talks about how you'll be able to get a lot of advantage as a developer out of Vista, both managed and unmanaged, right? So you're going to cover both of those two things. Clearly, you know, from the team that I'm on, we're definitely trying to make it really easy and all about being able to easily write, manage code, make Visual Studio the best possible tool to be able to do that. So, yeah, I definitely expect those to come out of that. So in terms of replacing Windows, no, not going to do that. It doesn't make sense. We add a lot of value to Windows. I think, you know, just like DevDiv has always done all the way back to the days of Visual Basic, right? We make it really easy for people to write Windows applications and really make the operating system light up. And that's where I think we bring the most key value.
Right. What I was getting at, though, is if you're a developer in the outside world, you now have a choice of developing for the web kind of methodology like Ajax, or you have the choice to develop for a rich client.
Use dynamic HTML, which the Windows guys helped invent 5 years ago and is catching on like wildfire. Yes, absolutely, you can do that. So, but I think, again, when you get down to a rich Windows client, right, I think that, you're starting to see web apps kind of light up and fill in that gap. It used to be I get plain HTML, a little bit of script, and then I had a really, really rich client. You know, the Ajax kind of stuff is filling right in the middle, but I think there's still a lot of value you get out of the client itself, and I think one of the things you'll start to see is you're going to start to see those applications light up more on a Windows kind of operating system and be able to do more because they're running on top of Windows, and we're going to help enable those sort of scenarios to take place. So that's where I think you're going to get the big benefit from Windows.
Just a question. Is there a possibility of someday making a more modular CLR, so you don't need this giant thing all the time, and so you could have sort of a I need it on demand kind of model, sort of a CLR. It's way out in a galaxy far away. I mean,
we'll make Jim answer that one. That's good.
Make me answer that one, right? Well, we've already got two of them, you know. Spotwatch has got a
tiny and Singularity CLR. Has
three and the compact framework.
Okay.
What's the third one?
I mean, besides us.
Besides us. Yeah. I said there are two options besides the CLR already, both of which are noticeably smaller. Yeah. Sure. Less functionality and, you know, other trade-offs.
I think the key thing that Joe's asking about, though, is more along the lines of, hey, you got this 20 megabyte redistributable.
Yeah. Right.
And I'm kind of feeling like the app I wrote is only using 4 or 5 of the DLLs and maybe some of that, maybe some of MS Core goo stuff that, you know, kind of makes it work. Yeah. And there are products in this space that kind of help you do this sort of thing, so should I be using that? And, you know, this is one of my blog entries that people wish that wasn't locked down so they could go yell at me some more. So I think that, we're definitely are starting to look at some of those sorts of problems. I think people are legitimately saying, hey, I can do this kind of stuff with other programming systems I've used in the past, and it's causing me some pain. So we are actually spending some time looking at what that could be like. Minbar for me, no matter what, is just good, you know, architectural layering inside of the system itself, so that it's, you know, the APIs and the working set that it pulls in actually makes sense for the scenario you're doing. And, you know, the famous one we had when we first started, we didn't ship this way, just to figure out if you were in debug mode in a WinForms application before we shipped version 1, pulled in a megabyte of system.xml to read a trace equals true, right? It's like, wow, okay, why are we doing that, right? So those kind of errors can be easy to introduce. You know, it's kind of Rico's pit of success thing, right? I mean, we make it too hard for that. So that kind of stuff we have to actually do, and there are still some errors in factoring. So, and we actually have type forwarders, which we introduce in WIDBI to enable us to, at the infrastructure level, be able to start refactoring types and being able to do that. Now, that said, we don't have any concrete plans to announce at the PDC, so you know, that's not what we're going to be talking about there, but I think architecturally it's the right kind of concept.
Cool. And just one thing, because I've been working with the Windows architects for a Windows Futures panel.
Oh, yeah.
And is it appropriate to talk about, as I said earlier, like in a galaxy far, far away? I mean, crazy ideas, out there stuff that may not come. I mean, it is futures. We don't know yet. So are you going to talk about, like, you know, having architects sit around and talk about what they think is very, very interesting.
If that's what people want to hear, there's a lot we can talk about. I mean,
cool. All right, well, I'm going to ask then.
I mean, we can't, you know.
Get ready.
We can't give away all our plans, right?
No, I mean,
you know, like, okay, so Java guys, are you listening? This is what we're going to do for the next decade. Here's all our best ideas and how to implement them. So somewhere between telling them everything, you know, and like, and standing there like sphinxes refusing to answer anything unless you know the password is, you know, a nice dialogue of like stuff we think is important and stuff that, you know, where we've been getting a consistent, especially where we get a consistent message from our customers, and it's pretty well known that there's pain points there. It's very nice for us to be able to say, yeah, we get it, we've heard it, we've got good ideas there, you know, that's on our road plan, it fits in with these other technologies, you know, and we can show what we're excited about. I mean, that's what I want to do. I want to show what I'm excited about.
Well, I mean, the number one thing is that it's too big, like we were just talking about. That's the number one pain point I always see, always, is it's just too big. Yeah, it's too giant.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a ton of value.
My question, why do you need the redist if it's built in the OS? Wait 5 years, it's all there. Then is there a problem with size? There may be. I really honestly want to understand what the problem is.
You're right.
So we're talking futures. Future, that problem goes away.
Fantastic.
But the question is, does that really solve the problem? Is there an underlying problem? The underlying problem might be that our working set's too big. That's Rico's problem. He's going to fix that. Right, Rico?
I've been working very hard on that problem. In fact, we've come
along with all of our problems. It's not just Rico alone.
Personally taking care of the whole thing.
Yeah. Oh, really?
I'll have it. What time is it? It's 3 o'clock. I'll have it by 5. You know, We did. We made a lot of headway. I'll be talking about that in my talk. In fact, I just wrote an article about that very thing, about, you know, some of the things we've done in terms of private pages, especially. It's really going to help people. People are going to be very pleased with what we've done in terms of their ability to write rich clients and get them running on the machines they want them running on. We've made a big difference, big dent in this release. I mean, there's more work to do. There's always more work to do, but we made a big dent. So, you know, I'm pretty excited about what we managed to pull off, and we've been working hard on it for the 3 years that I've been here. On the CLR.
But related to, you know, to Jim's comment, right? I mean, I think that's the benefit of the panel format, right? Rather than having a speaker who is going to be, you know, they've spent a lot of hours putting together the 20 slides and getting it just right, you know, meeting with a ton of people to make sure the message makes sense and that, you know, PDC attendees are really going to get that. Here's your opportunity to have an open kind of forum, right, to ask questions. If you're, Jim just made a controversial statement, you may say, that guy's nuts. Like, okay, show up, you know, the agenda's over here, looking forward to talking to you.
Fantastic.
Right, so I mean, that's a good interaction.
So when is this going to happen, Brad?
So we actually put the panels on the last day of the conference. And the reason we put them on the last day of the conference is to give some incentive to stay to the last day. So that's when all the panels are going to be. And then we haven't actually decided exactly when this one's going to be. But
well, hopefully everybody will have some good questions to ask.
Yeah, no, I think it'll be
going to all the sessions.
It'll be a lot of fun.
Cool. And who else is going to be there again?
So Patrick.
It's all of us who just talked to, and Patrick D'Souza, who's our basically our head architect and the guy who wrote all the garbage collector stuff. He's basically an old-time Lisp guy. Just did a keynote at the last Lisp contest. So another good person to have
very deep
there
guy,
as well.
Patrick. Yeah.
And there'll actually be a way on the PDC site to submit questions ahead of time, even, so you can give us, you know, a chance to prepare a little bit. And then, of course, you know, questions when you're there. It's sure. Obviously that's great.
So yeah, moderator, you're going to let us know the question. You're going to keep them secret and spray them on us.
Yeah, I don't know. We'll have to talk about it. But no, it'll be good. It'll be a lot of fun.
We want it to be very interactive. You know, we don't want it to be the case that we're reading a bunch of slides from a bunch of pre-canned questions. We want to be able to react to the audience. We want them to react to us. You know, if you boo sometimes, I think that might be a
if we don't get booed, that's
right,
a problem.
That's probably a problem.
Exactly. Let's make that the goal.
We want to get
you're moderating?
I'm moderating, yes. So it's a new goal.
We're trying to get a chat room going.
Okay.
Either an IRC or...
Oh, we can just have it going in the background?
Oh, yeah, and you can just read up there and
see. Yeah.
There's a lot of developers who are very meek and don't want to come up to the microphone, so they'll just be talking trash about you.
Yeah, I heard you gave a talk somewhere, right? You put an IRC in the background.
Oh, yeah, people are giving me heckling me while I was on stage.
Yeah, great. That'll be good. That'll be good.
Anything else we should hit? Or?
Yeah, I don't know.
I think we have another panel.
You got all these geeks here, man. What do you want to know about
the
CLR?
Well, wait a second. This is about the PDC.
This is a teaser, right?
Well, yeah, but you get your question in early.
look who's in the panel. Enough said.
Yeah.
I mean, you have a question about GC or perf or versioning or whatever, you're going to have big level architects.
So what kind of features are we going to be able to add to Channel 9 in the future?
Features?
Features. Oh, this is the future of the CLR that we use.
We got to migrate to WinBe.
To be fair,
I have tried.
Okay.
Oh no.
And
here it goes.
There's a couple little issues.
All right. Well, I ask your issue.
But it's specific to the way we implemented various things, and it's not as easy as it could be. It's our problem.
Okay. Probably didn't follow
taking
the design
a little longer.
Guidelines or something.
Didn't follow the design guidelines. You know. What can you do?
In your heart.
Cool.
Great. But this is great. Looking forward to it.
Great.
See you there.
Perfect. Take advantage of the fact that it's a panel. You know, go ask your question and then ask it again and say, yeah, okay, well, I liked Jim's answer, but Rico, how do you feel about the perf of that solution Jim's got in mind? Right. You know, and you can get that second or third perspective. Because we're going to have the depth, so go for it.
Well, watching architects argue, priceless.
Well, thank you.
See it.
Thanks, guys.
All right. Thanks. Thanks a lot.
One, two, three. We're back. So where are we now?
So we're in the same room, but we're actually talking to a different group of people doing a dynamic languages panel. So
okay.
These are a group of dynamic language buffs, and they're going to be talking about the future of languages on the CLR. Actually, I don't think it's specific to dynamic languages.
Now, are we all just going to switch to Ruby?
That's an interesting question that you should bring up at the languages panel.
All right.
I hear
there's going to be Chris Anderson's been playing with Ruby. Maybe he'll heckle you guys a little bit.
Yeah.
So where do each of you guys fit into the dynamic languages panel?
I won't actually be on the panel. You know, I don't hold the.
But you love dynamic languages.
I do love dynamic languages, but I don't hold the golden ticket. I will be, however, in Eric Meyer's talk. So there's going to be the kind of the languages panel, and then a talk as a predecessor to that, which is kind of what the platform is going forward for dynamic languages. So, and Eric Meyer over here is going to be the guy.
Oh, hi.
Yeah.
So you're Eric Meyer.
Yes, that's
and
right.
What do you do here?
So I'm an architect in SQL Server, but actually I'm a language pimper. So I, you know, work with this C# team.
Does your business card say that on there? I want a business card that says language.
Yes. Let me show you my T-shirt that I wear. Mm-hmm. You know. Actually, Nick Benton from MSR Cambridge, you know, had that idea, so I stole it because I think it's so good.
I love your T-shirt.
But I work with this C# and the Visual Basic teams on the Clarity stuff to, you know, put data integration in there. And, you know, I work with the CLR guys, you know, to bring more dynamism to the platform.
Stop being honest. He used to be a CLR
guy. I used to be a CLR guy, even, yes, yes. So one of the things that Joel is going to demo is a lightweight CodeGen.
Yeah.
That is something that I even wrote some codes for that's shipping in the CLR.
Okay.
So, and the language panel, this is the third time that we do that. The first one was PDC 2000, where I don't know, it's like famous, I smashed the laptop to you know, signify the start of the new era, the wow. end of COM, the CLR. And then with the last PDC, we had another language panel. So I think it's a good tradition, it's a lot of fun. You know,
what was the toughest question you got on either of those?
Well, I'm emceeing, so I was asking, you know, strange questions. So you know, I always ask, you know, somebody that does language A about, you know, what he likes about language B, and, you know, kind of put him on the wrong foot. And of course, we like questions from the audience.
So my question about Ruby was a good one then.
Yeah, sure. You should, you know, yes, yes, yes. And then, you know, you ask Anders what he thinks about Visual Basic, and you ask, you know, Herb Sutter what he thinks about C# and so on. So that's that's a good fun thing.
So it's like a language smackdown. what's the tough question you're going to ask, other than, you know, to try to get these guys fighting and throwing mud at each other?
I'm not going to reveal that, because once I do that, it's not tough anymore. So,
So you have a secret tough question that we have to.
Yes, yes, yes. It's a homework exam, exactly.
So could I ask you then, each of you, what makes a good language? We asked earlier, what makes a good language to you? You can't fight.
Okay, so the thing for me that's important in a language is that the difference with what the programmer has in his head and what he or she has to write down is minimal. So the cognitive dissonance, gee, I cannot even pronounce that. So and so that's why I believe, the reason I came to Microsoft is I believe in the multi-language aspect, because every problem, you need a different language, because, you know, you're solving a specific problem, so you want your language to be fine-tuned for that. So that's why I don't believe is everybody's going to program in Ruby, because, you know, yes, for some tasks you use Ruby, for something you use Visual Basic, for something you use Scheme, and that's the beauty of the CLR, is that we kind of, you know, have this infrastructure where all these languages can live, from, you know, completely dynamic like Iron Python or Ruby to completely static like C++ and C#.
And they can all work together in one assembly.
Yes.
Or, you know, one execution.
Yep. Yes.
Exactly.
Yep. Now somebody came running off the elevator right now and said, I have a hot language for you guys. How would you judge that? How would you, what would be the first thing you would look at in a language to see if it's a good language or not?
Is it a personal thing, or as a Microsoft?
Personal thing.
Personal thing? Oh, I have a different, slightly different set of things that I like in languages for me, as opposed to what I like for customers. So for what I like is a nice small language, I can understand all the aspects of it, there are no little hidden corners that are there to get you, and I really can understand the whole thing, and that it gives me the expressive power to do the kinds of programs I want. So that's what I personally like to program in. Now, that's not necessarily what everybody else likes to program in, but that's my own personal taste. It's funny, I feel like I'm sort of the grand old man on this panel.
Yeah, you're all schemer.
I'm a schemer. I hired both of these guys.
Grandpa Jim, yeah.
I started on the CLR team because it was multi-language and have been sort of the one driving that agenda for years. And
great.
Sort of delighted that right now we're finally going to meet. And when I started this 7 years ago, I said that I wanted to have three classes of languages. I wanted to have the object-oriented languages, which we did first, the functional languages, which we've essentially done all the underpinnings for, really, in release 1 and 2, and now we're just getting ready to do the third one that we predicted 7 years ago, which is the dynamic languages.
Amazing.
And so the only thing left out is Prolog, and I'm afraid for my personal taste, it's a fine one to leave out.
Now, why the question between your personal favorite and what you would do for customers?
Most customers are interested in writing things to get a job done, and then they're focused on the job. And for that, having extra features that make those things easy and making it particularly easy to do those things, and heading, I wouldn't say toward domain-specific languages, which is sort of too far for me, but, you know, in that direction, I think is really, really good. But what I personally do when I'm an architect. I'm no longer actually doing the shipping bits. So for me, the more interesting thing is little things that I can play with and try things out and stuff like that. And it's just a different experience. I also like to teach. You know, I'm a former teacher. I taught for many years, and for me, it's the same thing. I used to teach the Scheme course at MIT, largely because it's a small language. You can understand all of it. You can teach it to students, and they can go off and do it. It may or may not be the right thing to program, you know, that big application you're doing, but it sure is good for learning the underpinnings. And in my opinion, once you understand those things really well, you can apply to them all the other languages, and you have the base to do the really professional, good job you need.
Yeah, so the kind of languages I like that have a kind of very simple conceptual model. So if you think about, say, Excel, right? Everything is a kind of, you know, spreadsheet table of rows and columns. If you look at SQL, everything is kind of, you know, tables. Python is another nice example where everything is a hash table. If you look at functional languages, everything is a function. Yeah. So that's the kind of language that I kind of like, you know, as a from my kind of, you know, language purist point of view. But I agree with Jim that, you know, if you, for customers, if you want to get your job done, then, you know, you need more than that. So, but if I look for, if somebody comes screaming at me, I have this new great language, I will look, you know, if it has this nice conceptual model that you know, is like nice and pure.
That's so, what domain it's designed for. Yes, that's the other thing. So you ask what the domain is and make sure it's got the features you need for that domain. So.
Since you talked about teaching, what do you find that new hires don't know that they need to learn on the job here about languages?
About languages? Probably that's the least of their problems for a new hire here.
Okay.
But anything about how to structure a large system or how to build a large system, how to work within one without breaking it, and how to be able to understand the structure of the large system so that you can work on your piece without affecting the others and without spending all of your time trying to learn all the details of all the rest of it. It's a terrible temptation for anybody walking into a new system is, I got to learn it, I got to read all the code. Nobody that I know is going to be able in their first 3 months at Microsoft to read all the code in the runtime. It just can't be. I don't think you could turn the pages fast enough.
So the runtime is written in C++, right?
With C++ parts of C#.
Does that make it more or less difficult for a new hire to sort of understand how all the components fit together and maneuver inside of the system? I mean, in your opinion, is that the right language for that type of application?
Oh, so those are two different questions. Right. One question is, does the choice of C++ make it easy to understand and deal with the structure of the CLR? And the other is, was it the right choice for the system?
Yes.
I think the answer to the first question, my personal opinion, is no. It doesn't help us at all with understanding the system. The answer to the question, second question is, yes, you can't write the CLR in C#. You have a bootstrapping problem. So what are your choices? You write an assembly language? That's a non-starter. You write it in C, plain C. Frankly, that's what I would have preferred to do, but that's fine. And then there's the only other realistic thing if you want high-performance code and you want, I mean, customers are counting on us to provide an extremely high-performance solution. That means we are being paid to make extremely high-performance code. We need a tool that lets us do that, and it can't be a managed tool because we're building the managed system. It doesn't leave many options. C++ is a good choice.
So my advice to new hires that would approach the CLR team or look to get a job in the CLR team is to become a language pragmatist and, you know, the tool that I used was to absorb the drama. And it's actually quite an interesting way to learn about languages. You simply walk into conversations where, you know, Prolog sucks because of this, and Lisp is great because of this, and IronPython is great because of this. You just kind of absorb the spark between different people's opinions and ideas, and you know, you sit back and go, okay, this is kind of interesting and most of all fun. And I think that's the key issue here. Make it fun, and the rest is easy.
Well, I mean, the one of the greatest things about your guys' design of the CLR is that it makes languages less important beyond. What do you personally like beyond a C#? That's,
yeah.
I mean, and that's amazing. And the notion of having really simple, small languages to do very specific tasks could actually be the future. Mm-hmm. Some language called Drama, that's composed of all different types of functional, dynamic. Very good stuff.
One of the most interesting things to me from this whole cross-language thing, which is really underappreciated and underthought about, I think, is the common language specification.
It's the set of rules that lets the libraries be built so they can be used from all the languages, because that's the key thing. It's fairly easy to come up with a new language. The problem is, how do you get it to do all those things? How do you get it to draw windows? How do you get it to parse XML? How do you get it to read files? How do you get it to, you know, and the list goes on and on and on and on and on and on and on. So you have to have a library that all of them can use. That means you need some ground rules so that the libraries never come out perfect for any one language's point of view, or rarely. I mean, you're lucky when they do. But they work well in all the languages, and finding that compromise is an engineering problem, a really hard one, and I think, to me, that's sort of the core of how we got the cross-language to happen, and it's, you know, what we need to keep investing in if we want to keep it alive.
So I think these are the kind of issues that will come up in the languages panel.
Absolutely.
You know, we can start talking about those kind of things. But I think that one of the other interesting things is I'd love to hear an outline of Eric's talk, his dynamic languages talk that we're going to do. So, Eric, what's the outline?
Yeah. So one of the things that I want to kind of stress is that there's a big spectrum from completely dynamic language like Iron Python to a completely static language like, you know, C sharp or C++, and that there's also an interesting kind of middle ground. And the funny thing is that Visual Basic is right there in the middle, because it allows you to do static typing, but it also allows you to do dynamic typing. So.
Isn't that where the marketing problem of VB is right now? Because it doesn't stand for anything, you know. Not a religious thing you can a stake you can stick in the ground and say you got to use VB for this.
No, but that will change. I will bet you. and I bet you that in a year's time, people will point at VB as an example of modern language design, because it especially allows you to span these two worlds between, you know, static and dynamic typing. So apart from kind of, you know, looking at that whole spectrum, I also want to look at kind of what did we do in the CLR to help dynamic languages. So Joel will do a demo where he will show the lightweight code gen and all the kind of really geeky low-level stuff, you know, hacking at the IL level. And then I also want to talk about what we're going to do in the future, going forward, how we're going to grow the platform to make it, you know, suitable for dynamic languages. So, and I think, you know, in Java 1 there was a lot of buzz about, you know, the Java and the JVM as a platform for dynamic languages. But I think, you know, we will show them that we really kick ass, and that, you know, we'll blow them out of the water.
How do you guys know that it's time for a new language to be born?
That's a really good question. So the only new language that's been born around this area that I know of is C sharp. There's been others in other places. C sharp came out, frankly, out of a need to innovate in the Java space. We were precluded by a lawsuit from doing it in Java, probably just as well. And it forced a new language to come into existence there to appeal to a very large developer base that had a need that was underserved by the market. That's really what drives all new languages, is there some new idea, new area, new space that you need to be in. That's certainly what drove, you know, Scheme and Pascal and Basic, the original very first Dartmouth Basic back in the 60s. You know, it was a response to Fortran was way too hard to program in. Couldn't we do something that would be a lot easier for, let's say, students to use? And then it became wildly popular, you know, followed after that. Logo is another example. How do we do something for, you know, for 10-year-old children?
Yeah. Does it come out of the hardware capabilities that are coming at you? For instance, we're seeing multi-core processors coming out. Will that cause the birth of a new language that might be easier to develop in?
Whether it'll be a new language or a new programming model within a language, I wouldn't want to bet on. Okay. It turns out my PhD thesis was on exactly that. I did stuff in Scheme for 128, 256 processor machines. So there's a bunch of stuff that community knows about. The Fortran community has been doing this for a number of years, too. Guy Steele has been doing that for, I don't know, what is it, 1980 he started on that problem. Thinking Machine, the connection machine out of Thinking Machines Corporation, which was a million processor machine, did a lot of work on that, too. These are not brand new things. A lot of experience, a lot of learning there. I think we'll see new programming models. I don't know if we'll see new languages.
Yeah, so in some sense, you know, every language that we see now is just a variant of Fortran, right? So, you know, I think even though we think that all these languages are quite different, I think in the essence they're all kind of the same. And
Turing said something about that, didn't he?
Yes. But even kind of, you know, more concretely, right, they're all kind of, you know, if you look at the mainstream languages, imperative languages, so they're all kind of, you know, but it's still interesting that within that kind of, you know, mainstream, there are kind of a lot of interesting kind of little side streams. And, you know, building languages is the most fun thing that there is. So I think, you know, we will see many new languages sprout, and some will die, some will grow into, you know, successful languages. But and again, the CLR is kind of a very fertile ground to do that, to plant them in there.
What is it about some humans that gets them into the computer, gets them to program? I've struggled with that in my own life. That I just can't. Something about the way my brain works doesn't let me get into programming. Where I see other people, like even 11-year-old kids, pick it up instantly and just be able to talk to the computer and find that fun. What have you guys done any research in that? And maybe is there going to be a new language that's more abstract that lets more people program that wouldn't program today?
That's what VB was. Yeah. VB, which is a tremendously successful language, was precisely for that reason. It was because programming was too darn hard for the average person who wanted to write a small program. In particular, it was well nigh impossible to by hand in C write a GUI application. I mean, the amount of work you had to do, the code you had to write, was ridiculous. So inventing the notion of the designer and making that all happen, on a commercial side, I mean, there have been lots of researchy language that had done that kind of thing before, but that was really the impetus behind Visual Basic. What's my own experience with it was funny. I was working in digital at the time. I saw somebody who had this Visual Basic thing. I thought, oh, that's just superb. I really want to do that, but I don't like the basic language. I had used it, but I'd really like something else. So then I heard there's a brand new product coming out that's Microsoft about to release called Visual C++. Great, I'll buy that. I personally paid for the damn thing.
You got the 6-foot line box.
I got the brick. I managed to install it. I spent hours and hours installing it from all those damn floppies. Then I discovered it doesn't have a designer. It doesn't do any of the graphic user interface stuff. Why did they call it Visual anything? This is just a C compiler and a debugger. That I don't need, thank you very much.
Yeah. It's funny, Alan Cooper told me, and he's the guy who did the part of the visual, he did the prototype of the visual part of Visual Basic, and he said I didn't like Basic either. He wanted SCC underneath it too.
But what you're saying is that exactly what I tried to explain in the beginning. I think we should work for minimizing the distance from what you have in your head that you want to realize, the problem that you want to solve, and the way you express it in your programming language. And which means that, you know, people like us will keep us off the streets for many, many years, because programmer time has now become much more valuable than the processor time in some sense. Because hardware is basically free. Yeah. I mean, soon they will give it away when you buy soap or something. So I think we will go and optimize for programmer's time, so making, you know, this difference between what you have in your head to solve the problem and the way you express it in a programming language should become much smaller, and we have a long way to go there, because still I think languages are way too low level for the common people, to non-computer scientists, domain experts, to do their job properly.
So you know what got me into programming languages?
What's that?
Malicious intent. When I was younger, I used to go into department stores and they were selling Commodore 64s. Huh. And they'd have on the TV, you know, the basic prompt or whatever, and I'd run in and I'd 10 print Joel rules, enter, 20 print, 20 go to 10, hit enter, and then, of course,
nice.
It'd loop, and I'd run out and watch the department store people come up and like, I don't know how to fix this, turn it off.
Nice.
Well, I did even some more malicious stuff, because I did the same, but then I would poke zero, you know, yeah, into every, and then the machine would freeze, so I would do that to all the machines in the store. So that's the same thing. That was fun. Yeah. Basic. All basic was good fun. Yeah. And that there, the language specification fit on 10 pages or something.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But now we're getting like sound like old guys, right? But that was fun. And I think that's the the nice thing about programming language. It's so much fun.
Yeah.
And you know, I cannot imagine anything else that you know is more fun to do.
Yeah. Today's 16-year-olds, by the way, find security holes in our products. We hired one of them over at the Windows team. I don't know if you met him, but we're going to have him on Channel 9. He's a 16-year-old working on the Windows team, on the IE team, actually, finding security holes.
Wow.
It's an incredible kid.
I wish I was employed by Microsoft when I was 16. Get out of law school, lucky.
Everything good. Well, thanks for spending some time with us. We're looking forward to the... PVC sessions you guys are doing.
Sounds great. Awesome. I think that wraps it up.
Yeah.
Thanks, Charles. Thanks.
Thanks, Joel.
Thank you. That's awesome.
This has been awesome. I'm excited. I'm very excited for the PVC.
Good. Yeah, got almost 2 hours worth of tape here, so
marvelous.
That's great.
Cool.
So thanks.
So we'll do the usual.